we are going to continue on with our discussion of the bylaws of the church. I do want to just kind of open this up to kind of wrap up, but in the section on deacons, we had an excellent question and some good suggestions last week. So in the section on deacons, page number 16, deacons is point B, and then Roman numeral 1, or little number 1. The deacons have the authority to disperse funds for the purchase of supplies, paying for utilities, salaries, etc. However, for expenses over $1,000, congregational approval is required. And we had a discussion of saying something more like, for expenses over $1,000 outside the budgeted amount, congregational approval is required, so that when there is budgeted or designated money for large expenses, such as designated giving for Operation Christmas Child, wrote a check for probably $5,000 or $6,000 last fall, didn't come to the congregation for approval. Every year there's designated giving and funds in the budget for youth camp, and sometimes that is over $2,000. One time, at least, it was over $3,000 for that check. Didn't come to the congregation for approval, but the money has either been specifically given for that purpose or is in the budget for that purpose. And we want to avoid having too many of these, or very many of these. Okay, folks, we got to have a vote after church because we need to spend $1,032. You know, that is not the culture that we want to build on Sundays, when we really need to trust the deacons to use designated funds as they have been designated, even if it is over $1,000. So any final comments or thoughts on that? We had a bit of discussion. I think it was Lori's question, and then Jen just recommended saying the phrase, outside the designated budgeted amount, so that, you know, if it is an electronic cost, and we have $1,000, but the deacons want to buy a new computer, and it's $1,500, well, then we need to plan ahead and buy that and vote on it, or vote on it and then buy it. Okay? All right, no comments or questions. So let's go down to the administrative offices. The administrative offices, this is point number 2. So remember, we've divided the offices of the church into biblical offices and then administrative offices. The biblical offices are in the Bible. They are elder and deacon. And then the administrative offices are really ways to assist the elders and deacons, people that are quote-unquote offices we want the church to vote on, but they're not in the Bible. So, administrative offices. This is page 16, point number 2. To further assist the orderly conduct of business in our congregation, we have chosen to add 2 non-biblical or administrative offices. Treasurer. The treasurer is to serve the church under the authority of the deacons by maintaining accurate financial books, dispersing funds for all financial responsibilities, and keeping an accurate record of the church's giving. The treasurer may serve indefinitely. So, this is, you know, some important terminology here. This is a service to the church. This is servanthood. It's a big job. And since Jen is not here, I will just say this. She spends a lot of time. Every treasurer has spent a lot of time performing this task. It is not a, you know, 1 hour a week kind of just get it done. It is a significant task that requires a lot. So it is a service to the church and to the Lord. And it is under the authority of the deacons. So the deacons have responsibility for the facilities and finances. And so, therefore, the treasurer serves under their authority. And there's basically 3 tasks. Maintaining accurate financial books, dispersing funds, and keeping an accurate record of the church's giving. And really, that's the church members giving. So at the end of the year, if you get a giving report, it has been generated by the treasurer. Okay? And the treasurer may serve indefinitely. At this time, the treasurer is given a stipend. It's not an hourly wage. It is a stipend. It is much less than minimum wage would be for the hours put in. That is not written into the congregation or necessarily required. However, it is one small way of acknowledging the skill. Not everybody could do this job, and the time put into this. It seems like to me there was one other thing I wanted to say about this. It should just be a reminder for everyone. I think probably all of you guys know this, but the deacons count the offering, right? And they then give the envelopes to the treasurer. The treasurer associates amounts with your envelope number, not with your name. And so, on rare occasions, the treasurer may figure out what someone's number may be, but nevertheless, the treasurer isn't sort of even really aware of how much you give as a person. They just are aware that a number gives a certain amount. I think that there have been concerns in the past where perhaps a leader in the church knew the details of who gave what, and favoritism seemed to be a problem. And that certainly could be a temptation no matter what. And so you guys should know that I know very little about how much is given except the total amounts. I do look at that. The weekly total amounts, but it's in the bulletin, you know. But I really don't know who gives what. Except I can think of a couple of exceptions to that, but nevertheless. I know how much I give. Yeah, I mean, it would seem... you're busy counting numbers and not sort of like what check goes with what number. Yeah. Yeah. So. Okay. Any questions about the treasurer? Yes. Confidential. Yeah. That is a good idea. I'm just kind of thinking on my feet a little bit here. We would need to make sure that something like that, if it is included, would need to be stated very carefully. Because we have already discussed, for example, if someone stops attending our church, how are we going to handle that? You know, and they've chosen to worship somewhere else. Or perhaps they are under church discipline. How does that get handled? And we are careful to protect sort of a certain element of privacy. But we want, as a church family, to be willing to say so-and-so or such-and-such family has chosen to worship somewhere else. We want to be able to say that without violating whatever it is we might would put into the Constitution. So it might need to say something like private or personal information, parenthesis, counseling matters, financial giving, etc., needs to remain confidential. Perhaps. But I've got an elder and some former elders in here. Maybe you guys could kind of think about that and think if that should be included. Okay. Okay. Right before we go to biblical offices. Officers must use discretion and hold confidential any counseling matters or financial gifts, etc. Is that kind of what you were thinking? Right. Sure. So, yeah. right. Right. This should be, you're hearing something out of a child's mouth that should have, that what that you know was discussed in a deacon's meeting or an elder's meeting. Right. So I think we need to think about that. Yeah. There's probably not. Yeah. I think that we need to be very cautious as that regarding that personally. If we write certain things super specifically into the Constitution can then be used as a weapon. You know, and somebody's like, oh, I made a mistake, or my child overheard, or, you know, and we don't want that either. Yeah. So it would need to be general, you know, and more of a cautionary kind of thing. Yeah. With their children. And I disagree with that. So let me give my little defense of why I say that. God has given, and sometimes this is a judgment call, okay? And so sometimes, and I'll just speak from elders' perspective here, but as elders, we sometimes just make decisions for the church, right? Are we going to have a guest speaker speak for revival services, let's just say? And God has given these elders wives and also has called that husband and wife one. Yes. The two shall become one. And so there are certainly matters discussed in elders' meetings that need to remain protected. But there are other matters in elders' meetings that I have instructed the elders, just ask, what does your wife think about this? Because I would appreciate their input. And so I think that there are categories of things. Maybe it's more true for elders than deacons, but that we would appreciate the wives' input on. Now, you can go ahead and speak your mind. Right. 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 Personal matters. Right. Should not be discussed. Personal. Right. Yep. Yes. And sometimes, right. Right. So it is. So what I try to do is remind us in any given meeting, elder or deacon meeting, I try to remind us, please remember that this is one of those matters that must remain confidential. This needs to remain in this room. And so, of course, that's informal. It's not in the Constitution. But let's wrap this up. Go ahead, Dave. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it is sort of a large financial decision. You kind of want that to stay close until everybody kind of knows. Yeah. Yeah, so I have a note here. And I've been thinking about this. Okay, now what are we going to do? Because we've recommended some changes now, the last couple of weeks. And so elders will meet about this and discuss, you know, making some wording. How is this going to be said? Are we going to put it in at all? And then when we vote on this, my hope is that we will vote on this in April. We have a regularly scheduled meeting in April. And that we would then... Why print up a whole bunch of new drafts, right? Because we're then going to turn around and reprint the final one. So what we would do is, I would say, turn to page 15, and although this is what it says now, this is what we are actually going to be voting on. And we would add in something perhaps about discretion, and then, you know, about $1,000, et cetera. And we could have the actual wording on the screen or even printed on a page, you know, something like that. So it'll be very clear what we're voting on. Yes. Yes. So if anybody wants to do this, you can read a book called Open Secrets. Open Secrets. We all go to a small church, and we all live in a small town. and there are lots of open secrets. And the point that I took away from this book is we must guard against gossip, but we also recognize that people care. And sometimes it's hard to navigate what is crossing the line of gossip and what is an expression of care. I don't really think I have the answer to that. But as a pastor of a small church, I have had to not get quite so frustrated that it seems like everybody knows my business. So, anyway, I think that's all I should say. So, all right. Let's go on to the clerk on page number 16. The clerk is to serve the church under the authority of the elders by taking minutes at all congregational business meetings and maintaining a record of those minutes. He or she must also maintain a record of all new members and baptisms of the church and a roll of membership to be reviewed by the elders annually. The clerk may serve indefinitely. So these are things that are just pretty standard. Again, this is a position of servanthood, and they take minutes, they maintain minutes, and maintain a record of all new members and baptisms. Once in a while, we have to go back and, okay, what were the minutes and what was it we voted on? You know, the actual amount or something like that. We have to go back to those and refer to them. They're important official documents of the church. Questions about the clerk? This is Amanda. Yeah. So Ruth has served. Robin has served. Anyone else? Okay. Did my mom do it? Yeah, 1 year. Wanda fills in. Yeah. Yeah, my mom did not like that job. Did Deb Dillabaugh? Might have, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. All right. Number three, all officers of the church are to be nominated by the nominating committee and affirmed by majority vote of the congregation. Standard, what we've always had. Okay? Calling, responsibilities, and termination of pastoral staff. Calling pastoral staff. In the event of a pastoral vacancy, the elders are responsible to form a pastoral search committee. This committee must consist of at least six people, including at least two elders, at least two deacons, and at least two members of the church that are not officers. This committee will be responsible to seek for candidates who are biblically qualified and spiritually gifted to serve as an elder and pastor of the church. Okay? Before I go on, any comments or questions about that? Biblically qualified according to Titus and 1 Timothy and spiritually gifted. Point number C at the top of page 17. Once the committee selects a candidate and presents him to the congregation, the candidate must receive a 3/4 majority vote to be called as pastor. So this is different than the other officers. Basically, all of our votes in the congregation need to be majority, which is more than 50%. 50.01%, okay, really, 51% we say. Every vote needs to be a majority vote except calling a pastor or changing the constitution of the church. Those need to be 3/4. Well, and not just the pastor, but any pastoral staff that follow. those need to be three-fourths majority. It needs to be a greater degree of unity around who the pastor's going to be than voting on the color of the carpet, right, or the whatever. Point number D, a vote of confidence must be held regarding the pastor's ministry if a petition for his resignation is signed by 25% of the membership and submitted to the elders. The pastor must be terminated if 51% of voting members call for his resignation in that vote of confidence. So, any kind of questions about this? Some of us have lived through these votes of confidence. They are gut-wrenching experiences. I have never experienced a vote of confidence on me, but I was at a church where this happened. It's very, very, you know, sort of traumatic to the church. It should be avoided if possible. But if a pastor digs in his heels and is no longer biblically qualified but tries to hold on to his position, the congregation needs to have the power to remove him. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but last week, a week and a half ago, a very famous pastor was removed from his pulpit. And part of the problem was he should have been removed a long time ago, but couldn't be removed. They had a situation where an executive committee on which he sat had to remove him. And I think they had to do so by unanimous vote. So what does that tell you? He had to vote for his own removal. Somehow they removed him anyway. Go ahead. Yes, it is. I mean, that is part of the factor of this being a congregational church. Does the congregation vote on every penny? No. But the congregation makes the big decisions. And this is, I don't know if I said this before, but this is because we believe in the priesthood of the believer. As members, as believers, you are accountable to God and responsible before God for some of these decisions and have a voice, an individual voice in the congregation, and a conscience, and a relationship with the Lord, and prayer, and all of these things. So, because of the priesthood of the believer? Okay. Really, I would say that, and I have learned a lot from Mark Dever. Some of you men know this name, and others of you have heard Mark Dever preach or whatever. I've learned a lot from him. He is the most astute person on church government, sort of in our more conservative circles right now. I mean, just written on this out the wazoo, okay? And learned a lot from him. And he would say the same thing. We are a congregational church because we believe in the priesthood of the believer. So, all right. Any further comments or questions on termination of the pastor? Okay. This should be a new. So this is sort of technically part of paragraph D, but it really should be E, starting at, for any other pastoral staff, the current pastor and elders may serve as the search committee. Once a candidate is selected and presented to the church, the candidate must receive a three-fourths majority vote to be called as pastor. So there's kind of a little bit different setting for sort of what we might call assistant pastor or youth pastor or music pastor or something like that, a paid pastoral position. Then it would be a little bit different. The elders and pastor would serve as the quote-unquote search committee. And that, that is appropriate because that person will they will work underneath the authority of the elders and to some degree underneath the authority of the pastor, should that ever be a need. I think this church has one time had a secondary pastoral staff member, only once. So, all right, any pastoral staff and his spouse will automatically become members upon accepting the call to minister at Community Bible Church. Their membership will cease upon their resignation or termination. That's when you vote on the pastor, you're voting on his membership as well. Yes. For any other paid pastoral staff. Sure. That makes it clear. Yeah. All right. Anything else? Number two, responsibilities of pastoral staff. The pastor must agree to uphold and maintain all of the foundational documents of Community Bible Church. It is his primary responsibility to preach the Word of God, especially the gospel message. The pastor is to have primary responsibility for oversight of the welfare and ministry of the entire church. Along with the lay elders, he is to be responsible for all of the pulpit ministry of the church, including selecting or rejecting potential guest speakers. He is to be considered an ex officio, and that means by virtue of his position, to be considered an ex officio member of all committees, boards, and ministry teams of the church. Part B, other pastoral staff members' responsibilities are to be set by the elders with the approval of the congregation. So should we call an assistant pastor, then there would be, you would vote on a person, and at the same time, you would vote on their job description. It would be, let's just be realistic, it would be a part-time assistant pastor, and their responsibilities would be to oversee children and youth, Sunday school, visitation of the elderly, pulpit supply, etc. There would be the bullet points of that. Go ahead, Don. Yes. I have been. Okay. Now's your chance to object to that, if anyone wants to object to that. Maybe elders need to discuss that. But so I avoid voting, but maintain the right to, if necessary. And this is, my habits have changed over time, and sometimes I've been more involved with certain committees and less involved with certain committees based on my availability and need. I don't know if anyone has questions about that. You can just let me know. Okay. Ministry teams. Oh, there's a mistake. The ministry teams, ministry singular teams, plural. All ministries of the church, youth ministry, Sunday school, men's and women's ministry, various outreach teams, missions committee, missions teams, missions trip teams, etc., must function under the oversight of the elders. Again, this is a function of just that word, presbyteros in the Greek, sometimes translated bishop. But the idea of overseeing, of oversight, is the meaning of that word in Greek, and it is the responsibility for the elders to oversee the church. Spiritually and, you know, even administratively, if it's like, you know what, we have to make a decision. We want to expand our children's church to go up to the fifth grade or something like that. And they need to oversee that and have some say if needed. Okay? Point number one, new ministry teams may be formed as needs arise. Those interested in forming a new ministry team must submit a purpose statement and basic objectives to the elders for approval and must periodically meet with the elders for ministry updates and oversight. So the idea is, okay, what do you want this to be? We want this to be a race car ministry, and we're going to enter a race car in the Indy 500, and we're going to witness while we do it. Okay, and so what's the purpose? To share the gospel at the Indianapolis 500. And how are we going to do that? We are going to build a race car. Okay, I think we have volunteers already. We're going to build a race car. We're going to put Bible verses on the outside. We're going to whatever. Okay? So what's the purpose and how are we going to do it? And then they would need to meet periodically with the elders for ministry updates and oversight. So we're not as consistent as we should be with this, but elders try to meet with ministry leaders. We try to, or we have an elder on the team. So we're still learning some of how to be elders. But for example, I'm actually on the women's ministry team. Okay? And I meet with them. And I provide the elder oversight for that team. So they don't need to meet with the elders. Tom is on the Awana team. So the Awana team doesn't need to meet with the elders. They have an elder on the team. I'm on the missions committee. So the missions committee doesn't meet with the elders. But sometimes we have an elders meeting where all the Sunday school teachers come. We just sit down and say, what do you need? How are things going? We pray for the kids. It's not a very high-intensity meeting. There's not a lot of big decisions that need to be made, but we try to do that once in a while. Any comments or questions about ministry teams? Okay, missions committee. I'm going to read through the missions committee. We adjusted the missions committee phrase or a paragraph not long ago to make it more clear and to make it so that members rotated. So this is just exactly what we've always had, what we've had since then. It's only a year or two ago, but we've had it this way. Missions Committee. The Missions Committee is responsible to promote the cause of both domestic and international missions. The various objectives of the Missions Committee include assisting the deacons in setting the annual missions budget, educating the congregation regarding domestic and foreign missions, caring for and encouraging our current supported missions, assisting missions trip teams in any way possible, presenting candidates for missionary support when needed. The missions committee must submit requests for the use of discretionary missions funds to the deacons. The missions committee may not commit to the regular support of a new missionary without the affirmation of the congregation by majority vote. So you got to vote on a new missionary. Members of the missions committee are to be nominated by the nominating committee to serve a 3-year term with at least 1 year off between any consecutive terms. They must consist of a minimum of 3 members of the congregation. So any questions about that? That was adopted a couple years ago, I think, and we've left it as is. Okay. So we will introduce this, but we almost certainly will have to come back to the nominating committee. This is a significant change from the previous constitution. I doubt if we'll have time to discuss all of this, but nevertheless, nominating committee. The current elders of the church, plus 2 members of their choosing, serve as the annual nominating committee and must meet to prayerfully consider. I'm sorry, there's a grammar thing that's bothering me. The current elders of the church plus 2 members of their choosing will serve as the annual nominating committee and must meet to prayerfully consider the nomination of all church officers at least 1 month before the December meeting for affirming officers in the annual budget. Point number 1. Any member of the church may nominate a qualified man for elder or deacon and a qualified man or woman to fill one of the administrative offices. Number 2, the nominating committee is responsible to consider any such congregational nominations. The nominating committee may also nominate officers. That very often happens. We often don't receive any nominations for positions, and so the nominating committee prayerfully makes their own nomination. Number 4, the nominating committee is responsible to put together a slate of biblically qualified officers for the coming year, including elders, deacons, administrative offices, and missions committee members if needed. Okay, so currently, the nominating committee is supposed to consist of 2 elders, 2 deacons, and 2 members of the church, and myself. So if the church votes to affirm this change, it would no longer be a limitation on the elders, only 2. It would be all the current elders, and it would not include deacons. The rationale for that is, this is one of the most sensitive things that the church leadership has to do. We sometimes have to say in that meeting, someone has been nominated, but they are not qualified. Their spouse might not help them very much, is just a sensitive way of saying. Okay? We have to deal with private, personal, sensitive kinds of things that, let me say it this way, are pastoral in nature. And consequently, I believe that this should be limited to the elders so that that very frank conversation can happen and it be held relatively close. Now, the nominating committee must receive any and every congregational nomination. We should invite the people regularly to make those nominations, and we do. We have discussed the idea of having a bulletin insert where we actually say, here's a bulletin insert, members, take this home. We technically are going to need 2 additional elders and 2 additional deacons, and we need to replace the treasurer because she is taking a break or whatever. So pray about this. Fill it out and turn it in next week so that we're really inviting a lot of nominations so that there is congregational input but elder oversight at this point. So I know that this is probably the most significant change in this. I will dedicate time to discussing it next week, but are there any comments or concerns right now? Just too stunning to to say anything, or just yeah. So we'll pick up here next week, and this is not an attempt to sort of exclude the congregation. It's not an attempt to exclude deacons. It's recognizing this is the most sensitive thing that happens, perhaps. Well, I can just say it. I have withheld frank comments before in those meetings because I felt like it was something that should only be said to elders. And what would then happen is in those meetings, I would take those concerns back to the elders, and then the elders would have to kill a nomination. What would that be called? Terminate a nomination, or the elders would have to step in and say, no, we're not going to honor that nomination. So, anyway. All right? Yeah. That isn't always the case, but there have been times when, yes, I would just initiate an extra elders meeting, and I would say, here's the slate of officers, but we need to deal with something before it goes any further. That's kind of rare, but it has happened. Yes? Yes. Yep. That's what we're trying to do. Yep. Okay. All right. So we will pick up with that and give opportunity for further questions or discussions on this. Thank you very much.